Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, your source for breaking news, business trends, and economic forecasts here and abroad that impact one-third of America's economy. And now your hosts, Lou Weiss and Tim Grady.
And welcome to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio, where we are going to be speaking with Tim Fiore, who is the committee chair of the Institute for Supply Management in this ISM Manufacturing Report on Business series, to find out what manufacturers are feeling and experiencing out there. Lou, we've seen the preliminary, we've seen the report that came out at 10, and it's going to be interesting to have Tim explain those numbers. So here we are.
I'm feeling thrilled about the numbers, and Tim will be happy to hear that, even though the number is below 50. But Tim will tell us why that's great. And I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
In view of, death, doom, and dying is going on now. So,
yes.
Oh, boy.
Talk to us.
All right. I really wasn't looking forward to this. But, okay. So, yeah, we came in at 49.1. I think the expectation from some of the economists was a 44. So, and I think if I had taken a wager, I would have said 43, 42. So, that being said, this is a one-month survey. It reflects the performance in the month. And what we did do, we did have a window, so I don't think it necessarily reflects where we are yesterday. I think that needs to be said. And in normal times, a month is sufficient to indicate what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks to a month. But these are not normal times. Things have changed so dramatically in the last 2 weeks alone that these numbers are interesting, but you can almost look at some of them and know that they're going to head one way. So if I had my druthers, I would be taking a PMI every week now just to have a better feel for what actually happened to help predict what's going to happen in the future. But I also think maybe that the rate of change is not going to accelerate. I think we're at that rate now. And during the month of April, I'm hoping that we're going to stabilize so that by the time we get to the month of April and we have this phone call then, there'll be a lot more confidence about what's going to happen in the future. But I think if you look at these numbers, we had 9 of 10 sub-indexes in contraction territory. We had the worst one was prices, right, 37.4. So that's a real heavy contraction. A lot of that was energy market related, but the copper prices have collapsed too. Aluminum prices have collapsed. Steel prices are now dropping. So, it's not a big surprise. It reflects the fact that there probably is not a lot of demand out there right now for basic stuff. And, if energy prices and feedstocks are dropping, then chemical costs will drop too, plastic costs will drop also, and on we go. So that's the lowest number we had. And then, followed by new orders and imports, two different elements. Let's talk about the imports. I mean, 42.1, that's not that much of a surprise either, given the fact that we had issues with China coming out of its own virus issue. We had the Lunar New Year, and then we had the virus impact. And, you look at what happened with China, they were probably down for 6 to 8 weeks. And a lot of talk about air cargo shipping out of China by air in the month of April. That may or may not continue because the question becomes, is there really much demand now in the United States? So that gets us back to the new order number at 42.2, down from a 49.8. So, I would have thought that number would have been lower. And it wouldn't surprise me if it goes lower in the month of April, given the fact that, we're now looking at pretty significant layoffs around the country in all different industry sectors. The only one that really doesn't seem to be affected is the food and beverage area at this point. And there are a lot of additional capacities being pushed their way. So I could easily see the month of April with a new order number down, production down, employment way down, supplier deliveries way down, simply because nobody needs it. And the customer inventory, the inventory number being the same or slightly up. And so that gets you down into the territory that kind of feels like where we are today.
Maybe the ISM should just take a break for a couple of months and not report numbers. That way we could
I thought about that. I think the last time I did that was right after Pearl Harbor, I think.
Right, right. I think that was the only time you ever did see it. But that had more to do with spies in Japan and Germany learning too much about
it. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was wondering, the quality or the quantity of the responses that we were going to get this month. I actually asked, how's the response rate? Because I was concerned that people were going to be so overwhelmed by what they were doing in their daily job that they wouldn't have the time to provide the resource. But they did. They did the survey, did it well. And, but I was actually concerned that we weren't going to get the proper quantity of people responding because I know, like in my own daily life, I've been absolutely consumed by this stuff for the last 2 weeks.
Well, I found it interesting on one of our other podcasts, Where's Willie? Willie Miller, I spoke to him yesterday. He's the host of that show, and he's been calling around like crazy around the country talking to manufacturing companies, and he said about 90% of the people that he called are manning their phones, and myself included, All Metals and Forge Group, we are on business continuity plan B. Everyone is operating remotely from home except me. I'm in the office, which is probably the safest place I could possibly be because there hasn't been anybody here in over a week. So I go from home to car to office and reverse it. But there's a lot of people in manufacturing that are out there that are doing what they need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the automotive sector. I mean, there's not a, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this already. Sorry if I have, but in the transportation equipment sector, nobody is working. That's our number three manufacturing industry sector. No one. I mean, no planes are being assembled. No cars are being assembled. No trucks are being assembled. I mean, because the work is just too close. You're too close to each other, and you can't respect that six-foot distance. And, you know, the direct labor force, rightly so, was concerned about their own safety. I mean, you can send me home, send you home, Lou, but, you know, somebody's got to do conversion. And to convert, you got to touch things. And if you got to work in too close proximity to someone else, it's not fair to ask them that. And I've seen a lot of positive signs of labor and management working together to try to keep the factories running, but also maintain the worker safety. I've heard stories about extending production lines, cutting the tack time in half and or doubling the tack time, cutting the rate of the line down in half. And then equipping some of their workers with special PPE who can't keep their distance. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on about sanitation, sanitizing your workstation, as well as keeping yourself, your personal hygiene clean. I know in my main function, we've been very busy about sending out a lot of hand sanitizer to all of our employees around North America to keep them safe. You can't ask somebody to come to work unless you can promise them a safe environment. So a lot of that is happening right now, and that's where the productivity is. It's really getting these lines and facilities in a position where they can do some amount of output. And you know, if you cut down your line run by 50%, then your maximum output is going to be half of what you used to do, right? And, you know, that kind of gets us back to, how do we recover from this? And, first off, is how long will this last? And most people are planning on some amount of disruption for anywhere from 2 to 3 months. I think the 3 months is kind of the outside, but you saw the president yesterday confirm the six-foot distance issue all the way through pretty much the end of April. Ford announced yesterday that they're shutting their factories indefinitely, so no restart date at this point. So, you got to be prepared for, let's call it half of the output for the next 2 months. So that's you're going to miss 10%, at least 10% of your total annual output just by that simple amount.
What's the lowest number that the ISM has ever had?
I was just looking at it. 34.1 was the Lehman Brothers decline. I didn't go back beyond that. Yeah, 34.5, I think, was a number, within a couple of tenths. And the other thing I looked at was how many months did it stay down below 50? And it stayed down 11 months below 50. Now, I don't think that's what we have here. You know, I really don't, because unless the damage, the longer term damage to the manufacturing economy takes us a long time to climb out, I also don't think we're going to jump out of this thing overnight. I think the time, if it was a 2-week issue, that's one thing. But if it's a 2-month issue, it's going to take a little while to get back up to speed. It's going to take a little while for people to be confident to spend money again. I mean, the consumer confidence numbers had the same problem that we did, in that they're monthly numbers. And many of them threw caveats in that explained that the numbers were collected on such and such a day, da 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 da. But, you know, there's no doubt consumer confidence has taken a whack on this. So, you know, the positive thing was that the China PMI number came up. So they're at least stable and slightly expanding again, but they're coming off of a pretty weak base. So I think we're going to climb out of this slowly. I think we're now looking at the 2020 is going to be defined as this for sure, I think.
So is recession something on the horizon as we are pulling out of this?
The big economists, J.P. Morgan, Goldman, they think the next quarter is going to be – they think Q2 is going to be really rough. I've heard 6% decline numbers or 20% decline numbers in some cases. They think Q1 is not going to – I think that's – hold on, let me see if I got some numbers here. You've probably done the research as well as I have on this. I'm not sure we're going to be in a recession, but when you're not – when you're not making anything and people aren't buying anything besides food and stuff online, I'm not sure how you could actually be expanding.
Right. Yeah, Tim, I'm curious what the GDP number is going to look like, because, you know, you normally look at 1-3% growth on a $20 trillion economy. Now you have a $20 trillion economy slamming on the brakes. I can't imagine what kind of a number they're going to come out with, minus 70. I mean, it's going to be so bizarre.
Yeah, well, I think the last time we talked, I kind of commented that unless there's a $1.5 trillion rescue package here, fiscal rescue package, it's not going to make a difference. And I think now we're at $2 trillion just on the fiscal side alone. The Fed has expanded their balance sheet by they purchased over $1 trillion, I think, so far of bonds, securities. They're not calling it QE, but it's QE again. And they did it in the space of about 10 days. Good thing, I think, on the Fed is that they're really responding quickly. And I think that's positive. So normally if you threw all that money kind of into the economy and everything else was stable, you'd be looking at maybe a 3 or 3.5% growth in the economy, but that money is really just being put in to try to make up for the losses on the consumer side. So let's see. The OECD predicted that our GDP is now running at minus 4%. J.P. Morgan, Q2, minus 2%. Q3, minus 3%. And you know, they think positive for the rest of the year. So, yeah. Yeah, right. So, you know, I'm not sure you define a recession as two consecutive quarters of declining output, real output. So,
right.
We didn't have a very strong January or February, and we definitely aren't going to have a strong March. I don't know that we're going to go negative in Q1. I think Q2 will definitely go negative. How much, I'm not sure. And then, you know, Q3, I mean, I think we're kind of hoping by Q3, at least the latter half of Q3, people will be climbing out of it. So we'll see. We'll see how it all works out annually. But I think, you know, we're definitely in a quarter now that's definitely contracting.
Tim, you're sitting with an organization that monitors the supply chain from soup to nuts. What are supply chain managers doing now? I mean, it's such a bizarre time. I can't imagine. They don't have a lot of inputs going in because there's not a lot of demand, yet they've got to manage their supply chain. In some areas, like paper production, they're running at 120%. What are the supply chain managers doing? sector by sector.
Yeah, it's, so, you know, automotive and other industrial products, you can pretty much assume that that's headed to zero, right? I mean, it's been showing a decline for the better part of the month, and with everybody being let go. Probably not zero because industrial products are in there too. There are a lot of facilities that are still trying to produce, but probably at significantly less output. So, but that's not a real positive vertical for the next two quarters. CPG is probably being held up by just that, food and consumer packaged goods, and that's probably growing at, you know, somewhere probably at a 10% annual rate. There's bow wave effects in there where people advance by and then they consume and then they advance by again. So a little hard to tell, but I don't think there's any doubt that the food and beverage side is relatively strong right now. I mean, computer and electronics, high tech, you got to have buyers who want to spend, and you got to have industry that wants to recapitalize. And I think the latter is kind of being dried up at present. I think they'll get back on track in the next couple of months, but, you know, 5G network expansion was a big part of that growth, as well as cloud computing and things. So, but I think a lot of your investments are on hold at this point. It's just too many dynamics. We were impacted to a large part by the trade issues, and then we headed into essentially an election year that's uncertain, and now we have this environmental issue, you know, health and safety issue that is going to drag on. And the biggest question is going to be what, you know, is it going to come back in the fall? So, and I think the fact that people are talking more and more about that, there's a belief that, it'll come back. Question is, in what shape or form or fury? And then, you know, I think oil and gas is really weak, really down. It's going to stay down for a while. There's a big argument going on in the energy markets between Russia, OPEC, and us. We'll see how that settles out. And then, retail. Right now, retail is shut down except for online. So those are the big industry sectors, verticals, I think.
And liquor stores, they're doing a booming business.
Yeah, I think they're okay, but I think they're losing out on the bar and restaurant piece.
Oh, sure.
And it takes people a long time to go from social drinking to drinking at home.
Well, matter of fact, Governor Murphy of New Jersey was asked the question about how come food stores, pharmacy, and liquor stores can remain open. And his comment was, you wouldn't want to see all the alcoholics going through DTs on top of the virus. So the liquor stores will remain open.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much across the nation. They decide to leave it open as an essential business.
Of course.
Yeah, I suspect that's the only choice they had. I'm sure that the people who do the illicit drugs are having a hard time with supply, because I was just reading where China is not pumping out the fentanyl they used to pump out. They're operating on essential services, so the illicit drug trade's taking a hit as well. They expect a $3 billion downturn. But I doubt they respond to your survey, Tim.
Yeah, no, we don't have them in the chemical sector, man.
Maybe something.
Yeah, that's, so I'll tell you, this will be something you can tell your grandchildren for sure.
No doubt.
My grandchildren are going to George Washington University in Washington, D.C. They would know this very well.
they're learning from home, right? They're online, going to college online.
That's right. So
Tim, what is a prospective report on business look like a month from now, when in reality, 70 or 80% of the manufacturing is idle?
Yeah, well, I think we're gonna get down to those numbers nobody wants to hear, but I don't want to be a doomsayer or predictor. But let me I go through the comments a lot, and I track certain things that I think are important for a period of time, and then I move on. So the tariff issue was less than 1% of my general comments, right? Less than 1%. And you can see that the White House is talking about deferring payment on it. They're not talking about stopping the program, but they're saying you still owe us a tariff, so you just don't have to pay us until sometime in July or August. That hasn't been decided yet, but I think, you know, clearly they're concerned about that, quote, extra tax being a financial burden on the business community when everybody is fighting for liquidity.
Right.
The other thing I track is sentiment, right? So sentiment, which is it's a bit soft, and I try to keep it as quantitative as possible. But the sentiment turned in a month, as you would expect from, let's see, what did I have here? Let's see. We went to, well, in the month of March, we went to two not-so-positive comments to one positive. So, and something tells me that the one positive probably came at the earlier part of the window period, not at the later end. So the sentiment has definitely turned. People are a lot more concerned about what the future holds. And nobody, none of the panelists ever really predict what's happening, but you know, they give you a feeling for order book and next month's activity. So we had only one positive comment to two not so positive comments. And we haven't really had that kind of a ratio since, October. Yeah, where we had one positive comment to 1.3 not so positive comments. So, in September, it was a little bit worse. We haven't had any not so positive comments compared to positive as bad as this month, which is no big surprise. We had 80% of the general comments were coronavirus related. So, and that's not a big surprise either. So, and most everyone was currently experiencing issues. A small percent were not experiencing issues and were expecting that they would experience issues. And again, those comments probably came from people answering earlier in the survey period. But I think an interesting piece out of this is that about 46% of them, of that 80%, noted revenue issues, and about 43% noted supply chain issues. And I would guess at this point that that number is probably more like 65-35, is that the revenue issues and employment and reestablishing stable production output are much more paramount on people's minds than expediting orders from suppliers, in many cases, suppliers recovering from China. So let's see. I got some comments on the China situation, too. Let's see. I went and dug into that. Okay. On the supplier delivery side, 66% of the comments were coronavirus-related. One-third of them were China-focused. And the other two-thirds, I really couldn't tell. So, you know, using the basic diffusion index methodology, you could argue that 66% of the comments were coronavirus-related. Half of them were related to reestablishing supply chains in China. The other half were more about domestic supply chain issues. I think that number is going to shift closer to more domestic issues and China issues in the month of April. And the last thing I've been tracking here is the labor comments. So I've been watching for layoff comments way back since August of last year. And, you know, 55% of our comments in the labor area were related to force management, staffing levels. And from a positive standpoint, about 40 points of those 55 were really around no hire and achieving the goals through attrition. And only 15% were layoff related. I think that layoff number has been swapping. The prior, I started to track this thing in, back in December. We had 5% in December. Yeah, we had 5% in December layoff focused. In January, we had 13%. In February, we had 22%. And in March, we had 15%, which is kind of like a reverse. But again, I think if you ask that question today, you're going to see a big difference with all the furloughs and the layoff releases occurring now. It's no doubt that, as I said at the beginning, new orders will be weaker, production will be weaker, employment will be weaker, supplier deliveries will be weaker, and inventories will either stay the same or come up slightly.
Tim, I'd like to go back to one point that you mentioned some minutes ago about the tariffs. You were referring to, in effect, a forgiveness of the tariffs. Can you go into more detail about that for our listeners who are involved in that?
Yeah, I think from what I can tell, what they're saying is that the tariffs remain on the $200 billion or $300 billion that's currently being tariffed, and they'll remain at the same rate. Just the importer of record won't have to pay the amount. So it's almost like an interest-free loan that the government is providing to the importer of record. But that at some point in the fall, they'll have to pay that amount. So there seems to be a big debate going on. It's not there's not that much public information about it. And the chief architect of the tariff program, Peter Navarro, he's turned into the industrialization leader. So the tariff issue is probably now pretty much all Lighthizer and the U.S. trade rep. But yeah, they're talking about they're talking about just forgiving the payments until some point in the future. So it's essentially a zero interest loan.
So it's not a forgiveness of the tariff, it's a forgiveness of the payment for some period of time.
I think, but there must be a lot of discussion, debate about that, whether they should just forgive it or whether they should treat it as a loan or deferred payment. So there must be a lot of back and forth about what the right thing to do on that is. And maybe they're arguing about they should maybe eliminate it, but other people are saying, no, we don't want to. It's probably all tied up with the whole China discussions. And
right.
I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but the reason we're struggling with PPE is that most of it comes out of China.
That's right.
So we don't have the ability to just mobilize our factories domestically and have them produce for domestic consumption and stop them from exporting. I mean, China has an extensive industry in this area. It's textiles and wovens, non-wovens. And they're probably producing at high rates, probably replenishing their own stockpile, concerned about the fall, also selling into Europe and selling to us. And that's probably a lot of the reason why everything is so vague about where are they all and how many do we have on order.
I'm wondering if they are charging tariffs on the PPEs and the masks on the American public, which is what has been going on. The question is, are they tariffed? Do you know?
I think I saw something that said that they were, but the tariff has been temporarily lifted. But again, that wasn't a headline number. You know, it was something that's kind of happening in the background.
Right.
Tim, is your suspicion that as you watch the supply chain react to this, that we're going to see a whole lot more of made in America on the label of a lot of goods?
Well, you got to ask us. Oh, go ahead, Lou.
I'm saying China could put on their made in America. They falsified other things in the past.
I think I'm not sure if I mentioned this earlier because it's been a busy morning, but I think a lot of the things that we took for granted and assumed were right have been put into question now. I think the stuff that manufacturing worldwide for the last 30 years has pursued. Oh, hold on a minute.
Sounds like an Amber Alert.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. The stuff that global manufacturing has pursued is lean, right? The most efficient use of every square footage and movement of a person. And global supply chains allow the capital to move to the place that can produce the product at the lowest total cost. And, that's led to people working very closely with each other, which is a really bad thing right now. And materials being moved around the world via ships or air cargo that either, one, take a lot of time. Number two, are affected by a domestic situation in a country that has to shut down for whatever reason. And number three, are subject to export based on the desires of the government of that country. And I think you got to kind of step back now and say, all right, If this is really the way we want to pursue manufacturing, we need to come up with some kind of plans that when we have these major disruptive events, it doesn't bring the world's economy down to some really unacceptable level, which is where we're headed now. So I think everything's going to have to be reassessed. I know we sent out I think it was the ISM survey that we sent out, asked if there were adequate plans in place to address this kind of an issue. And I know as a respondent, I said, well, geez, I have never actually sat down and thought about a global pandemic and what that would mean to my industry. So how would I have planned for that? I don't know. I mean, if it was a U.S. pandemic, okay. If it was a Chinese pandemic, okay. But a global pandemic, I'm not really sure I thought through that. Even the high-tech guys that now are, apparently they have all the masks, a lot of that was done from business continuity plans. So I was reading something the other day that a lot of the high-tech guys in California, they had stocked up on masks because of the wildfires in Northern California, and they determined that masks were a good thing for their employees. So they had a big stockpile of them. But, that came out of a local environmental issue, not that they were prepared for a global pandemic. But
right.
you can bet, I mean, the global pandemic question, when you do a business continuity plan, that question, are you prepared for a global pandemic, is probably going to be one of the five big questions. And you're going to sit there and put everything that we've learned from all of this, I think we can take some steps and better steps. I mean, we're actually advance ordering stuff so that in the event this happens again, we have a stockpile so we don't have to, respond. And your response is always not quite where you want it to be, right? No matter how good you do.
Right. Well, Lou, anything else you want to throw at Tim? Or Tim, anything else you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up?
Yeah, Lou?
Yes. All I can say is that we should all be following the procedures that they're laying out for us now. It seems as though no matter what we're going to do, there are and will be a lot of people dying. You just got to hunker down and do what you got to do. There's nothing that we can do in mass that's going to create a quick fix. So let's just hope we all come out of this on the other side as well as we are now.
Yeah, I think I'd like to close it with a really positive comment on what I was following on General Motors and Vertiv, I think it is, the ventilator manufacturer in the Northwest, and what they've done and some of my counterparts in the supply chain did out of GM to go out and assess sources and capacity planning and ramping up to be able to set up an assembly facility in Kokomo, I think it is, Indiana. Really, for any of you who haven't seen the story, I think it was a journal story several days ago, you should go look at it because, you're proud to be an American, you're proud to be in U.S. manufacturing, and you're proud to be in the supply chain because the CPO at GM did a great job in mobilizing his workforce to get the drawings, get samples, get out there into the supply community, get their commitment, work out a forecast. They're well on their way and really, really encouraging. When I first heard that GM was going to be building ventilators, I thought, well, they're not going to do that in a car factory. But, as the story unfolded here and what they're trying to do, it's really commendable. And it's a great statement on U.S. manufacturing and teamwork and working together. So if any of you listeners have a few minutes, go check that out. You'll find it to be really interesting.
Well, I'd like to also mention an article that I uncovered yesterday, the day before, of a entrepreneur, small guy, small company, built a helmet, a plastic helmet, that would take the place of a $50,000 ventilator, which is now selling for $150. And the CEO of Virgin Air has come up with, I think, $200 million for him to expand his business. And it works as well as a ventilator. So if you look on the internet, I'm sure you can find it. I mean, it looks like a space helmet. and you're in there breathing away. And it's a lot cheaper.
I think I saw that.
Yeah, it was great.
I saw that.
It's incredible stuff. It's incredible stuff that American manufacturing and American ingenuity comes up with. And I think that, to a large degree, is going to help taper off this ugly curve that they're anticipating. And we'll come out of this smelling like roses. For all of you who are listening to this show, it's not a time to panic. We just all need to follow the guidelines. We will come out of this on the other end somewhere, and we'll be okay. 2020 is going to be a rough year, but as my oldest brother once told me, in times like these, we have to remember there have always been times like these. So that's where we are at the moment, and we appreciate you listening to Manufacturing Talk Radio. Tim, thank you again for joining us and sharing what's happening on the supply side of things. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks very much.
And stay healthy.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. Tim?
So that's where we are in this hour of or moment of Manufacturing Talk Radio, Lou. It's tough times, but we'll get through tough times.
It's uplifting that we didn't hit 39 in the ISM number.
Yeah, right.
So we'll see how we fare next month. I'm not too encouraged, but again, to all our listeners and our guests that we've had, stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy your solitude.
Yes, right. All those projects that were on your honey-do list, you may have time to now actually do. And thank you for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.